Hello, I'm Veronica Scaresbrick. On his arrival in Africa, Pope Benedict had highlighted how this continent has a distinguished place in the annals of church history, with its witness of saints during the first centuries of Christianity, mentioning a few of them.
Le témoignage de nombreux grands saints de ce continent, Saint Cyprien, Saint Monique, Saint Augustin, Saint Athanase, pour n'en nommer que quelques-uns, montre la place remarquable de l'Afrique dans les annales de l'histoire de l'Église.
The Holy Father also then went on to mention the figure of a more recent African saint, Josephine Bakita, a figure he highlighted in his encyclical Spe Salvi.
The life of Saint Josephine Bakita offers a shining example of the transformation that an encounter with the living God can bring to a situation of great hardship and injustice. In the face of suffering or violence, poverty or hunger, corruption or abuse of power, a Christian can never remain silent.
He did this, as we know, after becoming the third pope to set foot on African soil. Well, I'm sure all of you know who the first one was. He was that first Roman pontiff ever to board an aeroplane and travel, the pilgrim pope, Paul VI. It was July 1969 when he travelled to Uganda.
For the first time in history, the successor of Peter as Vicar of Christ sets foot upon the soil of Africa.
Nigerian-born Cardinal Francis Arinze, currently travelling with Pope Benedict in Africa, once expressed to me his emotions regarding this particular journey.
He loved the mission church, and he showed it by the way he treated the mission bishops. Indeed, from that time, the number named bishops in the mission countries increased at a very fast rate. He came to Africa, to Kampala, 1969. He inaugurated the second, the Symposium Episcopal Conferences of Africa and Madagascar. He honored the martyrs of Uganda, and he gave that wonderful speech, which Africans do not forget, where he spoke on enculturation and the necessity for the church in Africa to undertake missionary work also among Africans.
A burning and much discussed question arise.
He said, you Africans are to be missionaries to yourselves.
The adaptation of the gospel and of the church to African culture.
And also that once we maintain the unity of faith, we can and we must be African. So that's very encouraging. Of course, the work remains in enculturation. It is not something completed. But at least no one can say that the church does not encourage it. So Pope Paul VI should be thanked for that.
The missionary church Cardinal Francis Arinze highlighted was dear to Paul VI. But exactly 40 years later, Benedict XVI also highlighted upon his arrival the importance of this missionary church. Right up to the present day, waves of martyrs and missionaries have continued to bear witness to Christ throughout Africa.
Depuis lors et jusqu'à nos jours, d'innombrables missionnaires et de nombreux martyrs ont continué de rendre témoignage au Christ dans toute l'Afrique.
Benedict XVI there was echoing John Paul II's words when he spoke back in June 1992 on one of his 16 visits to African nations. It was while he was in Angola, with a civil war still going on. And while on this occasion this pope called ceaselessly for an end to the bloodshed, he also pointed to the missionary work in the midst of the horrors of war, thanking catechists in a particular way for keeping the faith alive, despite, he insisted, their state of total isolation in the jungle. At this point in the broadcast, I thought I'd share with you the words of missionaries themselves. First of all, those of Angolan-born Divine Word Father, Stanisław Chinekase. His order may not have been among the first to settle in this nation back in 1491, but at this very moment they are extremely involved with at least a dozen houses there, among other things in the field of education.
The mission had a school, you can enter a school, later on in the seminary. So even today, some of the most important people serving in the government and main offices are ex-seminarians. I have some of my companions now working and as high officials, the army or the government, they were seminarians, and they acknowledged the work of the church in this field.
Given the dramatic history of Angola, I couldn't help but ask Father Chinekase about the legacy of the Civil War, one that must have left scars running deep among all generations, both at a physical and psychological level.
Yes, it is true. You cannot say there's no family. Angola cannot say that among my relatives, some people have not suffered from the war anyway. Directly, some injured or some lost. We are aware of it. The church also, our governors aware of it. That's why they say that the church can also play a greater role in this field of the healing, no? And that is a long process. Yeah, reconciliation, okay, but we should still overcome maybe some, you know, revenge that could be Eden, we never know. I think the church can do more because the church also has its moral authority. Even during the war, was the only voice who was speaking about reconciliation, about peace, about negotiation. So we have this, I think, this moral authority, but also the duty to help people to overcome all these scars. But you know, the civil war is something terrible, no? Because it literally divides peoples, the same family. Now our message is just to try to counseling people, but also to give this strong message that the gospel can give.
Well, thanks there go to Angolan-born Divine Word Father, Stanisław Chinekase, who's on the General Council of the Divine Word Missionaries. Another of the many missionary orders present in the Angolan capital, Luanda, is the Society of African Missions, SMA. Earlier in the week, I spoke to the Superior General of the order, Father Kieran O'Reilly, who recently travelled to Luanda.
Tell me about your missionaries in Luanda then.
It is, for us, a recent enterprise in that we are a society in existence over 150 years. And our initial missionary thrust was along the west coast of Africa. 10 years ago, members of the Italian province of our society established a presence in Luanda. And that is a very big parish in a new diocese that has been cut off from the diocese of Luanda. It's the diocese of Cajito. Cajito, the city is south of Luanda, but that part of the diocese is a portion of Luanda. It has only been cut off about 2 years ago with a new young bishop, an SVD bishop. It is part of what I found out to be an extraordinary expanding city. Luanda, I suppose, because of the war and the background, developed probably slowly. But now that peace has come, it is spreading out in all directions at an enormous rate with a huge influx of population from the rural areas, as is happening indeed in many of the great, if not all of the great cities of Africa. But this is particularly so in Luanda because the numbers coming into the city, my own men there were saying, each month are significant and that there are very little preparations made to receive them. And that's one of the great challenges of our own parish set up there is the immense poverty that many of the people who come into the city are forced to live in because there are no services like electricity or water available immediately to them. So you have new communities trying to organize themselves, trying to see about schooling, trying to see about healthcare. So obviously one of the main agencies for that is the Catholic Church because of our background. So our own men who are involved in that area are very much working with Caritas, Justice and Peace, and trying to build up these small communities, very often with meagre resources. The parishes that I visited, not yet parishes, but the chapels where they said Mass, were of very primitive style in comparison to other parts of Africa. But, like with all parts of Africa, a wonderful spirit of prayer, of gathering together, of people who want to celebrate, even when their surroundings are not, you know, very, very salubrious. Nonetheless, they gather together early in the morning for prayer, for Mass, when the priest can come. It really is, I suppose, a wonderful example of the spirit of Africans, that irrespective of the difficulties that they have around them, they have a tremendous capacity to celebrate life and to celebrate the gift of life and the gift of God in their lives. And that is what really struck me when I visited these small communities that are barely coming up, and yet the numbers are huge in these new bidonvilles or the banlieue or the outside areas of the city of Luanda.
You spoke about two things there, the poverty in a nation which is one of the richest in terms of natural resources. It's one of the major oil countries. It has diamonds, so-called blood diamonds, and other kinds of minerals and resources in general. And then you spoke about the spirit of Africa. I mean, you're very familiar with Africa. What struck you in particular about the spirit of the Angolans?
Well, I suppose what struck me most was that, first of all, like as happens in the French countries or the English-speaking countries, the common language that's used in the church is Portuguese, that there are many, many different tribal groups and ethnic backgrounds. So it is the common language, and that is the established language of the ruling class and of the government, etc. And I suppose what really struck me about them was the similarities between them and the other small communities that I have encountered right along West Africa, Central, East Africa. But they are a great sense of working together to build something that's only at its very beginning. If you see some of the churches, they're only very, very primitive by any standards. Sheds, really, with just simple kind of roofing, and yet the church is packed early in the morning for Mass in the middle of the week when you go there. The people are genuinely seeking a way to build their communities, and they see that the church is one of the key ways to do it, really. So I suppose what struck me is what it confirmed for me, that the Angolan people have a great sense of God, a great sense of trying to help each other. Now, there are difficulties, obviously, and poverty is a great thing to be overcome. As you say, the country is very rich, perhaps one of the richest in Africa. And perhaps that was the cause of all these terrible wars.
27 years of war.
Yes, it has been. So you see, it'll take a good while for things, I suppose, to try to level out. No doubt the government has plans, and the president was recently re-elected. So hopefully that into the future, there will be a more stable type of, if you like, a culture of peace that will generate more income, that will raise the people's level of living, and that will give more income to everyone. I suppose the main thing always is the number of children that I saw. Children are everywhere. Now that's wonderful, but you have to then be able to educate them, and you have to guarantee that they have clean water, that they have medical care. I saw in my own parish, and I heard in other areas, that one of the main challenges for the church is in these two areas. Because with peace, of course, we thank God, there are no more killings, there are no more terrible bombings.
The land is littered with landmines.
The land is littered with landmines, and still you can see the damage that has done. You can see the people.
And you see it physically in the people.
Well, not so much in a big city like Luanda. You will see an odd person maybe with a limb missing. So then you presume perhaps there are centres for taking care of them as well. I didn't visit any of those now. But I think like that, maybe that's why people are leaving the rural areas. One of the contributing factors, that you want to bring your family to safety somewhere. Unfortunately, coming into the city isn't always the solution either, because you're asking them to live in circumstances and conditions that are far different from something that in the rural areas might be very much better for them. You know, that there is better food, better water and all that. However, people make their choices, and one of the realities of Africa today, in sub-Saharan Africa, is the movement to the great cities, and that urbanization is not going to stop. Somebody said to me, they think the government has largely kind of decided just to ignore the people, hoping they'll go back. They don't go back in Africa, they remain in the great cities, because that's where the opportunities are.
Warm thanks there to the Superior General of the Society of the African Missions, Father Kieran O'Reilly. Thanks for listening. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick.